So thank you. I really enjoyed reading the book. I was reading it right at the time my father died, actually. And so I was reading it at the time when you were talking about grief and so forth. And so that was, the timing of it was very helpful to me, which is actually why it took me a little longer to get through it. So, but I've only been up to the Abbey once before. Mm-hmm. So do you read the 37 practices at every meal?
Not every meal, but we have, after lunch, we have a cycle of five different texts. So today happened to be the day that we were doing the 37 practices. There's four other texts that we read.
Oh, okay, so you rotate through.
Yeah.
Why did you feel that now was the time to write this particular book?
Well, I had taught a course here at the Abbey, a weekend course, that was based on the 37 practices, and somebody transcribed it. It was published in Singapore, a very small free distribution book, and we got so much good feedback, people just saying, oh, that really helped me, that I decided, gee, it would be good to enlarge it and make it available through a commercial publisher here. So then we all sat around the kitchen table. We had a course going on at the time, so there were a lot of people, and told stories that fit in with the verses, because the original version didn't have the stories. Okay. And then I took other stories that people had sent me, you know, throughout the years and put them in. So all the stories are true.
And they're mostly, I mean, they're all connected to the Abbey in some way, from what I could tell.
Well, they're all people we know.
Right.
Yeah. Because if we didn't know them, then I would have just made up the stories.
Right.
You know? Yeah. But it was all people we know, so.
Yeah. I've actually met some people who have told me they're in the book.
Oh,
they have changed names.
Uh-huh, yeah. Right. Yes, I changed the names. Although once in a while I kept it, you know.
You've kept in touch with people and you've kept the letters that you received and stuff. So that means that's got to be meaningful to the people that you've worked with, your students.
Hopefully. Yeah. And some came from the residents. Yeah, you have some stories in, and you have some stories in. You have some stories in there?
Yeah. Zopa does.
Zopa does.
It was 2009 when we really did that.
So. Yeah, it was a while ago, before you came. Okay.
Okay. So you've been working on this for a while, this particular book?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel, and maybe I'm wrong, but I, if you go into, you know, the bookstore or something, and you go into the Buddhist section, there's the bookshelves are full of modern, maybe Buddhist teachings. Mm-hmm. But you chose to look at a 14th century teaching to really expand on. Why do you feel like that is something that is relevant, and why do you choose to focus on that particular?
Because, as His Holiness Dalai Lama says, the minds of people centuries ago and our mind, there's no difference. We all have the same defilements. We all have the same good qualities. They manifest externally and differently because we have a different environment, but it's the same. And that particular text, I've studied it many times, and it's been so meaningful in my own practice. I look for meaning. I don't look for the publication date of a teaching. Yeah? So it doesn't matter who said it if it makes sense. And I found that the things that Buddha said, you know, 2,500, 2,600 years ago, and things his disciples said after that made sense. So in fact, there's some way more reliable, because then there's been all those centuries where people have practiced those teachings and gotten some outcome. So you can look at that and say, okay, if I practice, I'll get the same outcome as those people. Whereas people who invent something, you know, and they want to, like, redo it to make it more modern, then you don't know what kind of outcome it's going to bring.
Right. This has been tested and
tried,
I guess you could say.
Right, yeah. FDA approved. You know, they run all the trials and they see it works.
Yeah. Back to the five different texts that you said you read, and this is at the meals, and this is one of them. Is that typical at different abbeys or particular to this?
Well, the five texts we read are shared with, they're very common in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. The fact of chanting texts after meals, I think some places do it. Okay. Dharma centers wouldn't do it, but, you know, monasteries would. Yeah, but the five texts, I mean, we do Heart Sutra, and, you know, any of those that are quite common.
Sure. And for the people who are going to be reading the book review are familiar with the Abbey, they know you're here, but they probably wouldn't know what a Bodhisattva Bodhisattva. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Wouldn't know what that is. Like, how would you define that?
A person aspiring to fully cleanse all the negativities from their mind and develop all of their good qualities for the benefit of all living beings. So someone who has that kind of aspiration.
Okay.
Doesn't mean they've done it. They have that aspiration.
In your book, you point out that you don't know who that is or isn't. And so
right.
Treat everybody as if they are.
Yeah.
Which is a practice in itself, isn't it?
Yes. Because usually we treat everybody as, you know, our first thing is, are they going to help me or are they going to harm me?
Right.
You know, so that the filter is always, you know, how does this person relate to me?
Right.
So treating everybody as if they have some inner goodness and they have some beautiful aspirations inside of them, that never hurts.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it helps us overcome all of our suspicion and false projections on other people. Just why it's called Don't Believe Everything You Think.
Right. I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you about the title and how you chose that.
Yeah. I said it one time during a teaching or something. Do you remember what the teaching was? I just was talking and it like came out and then...
We probably said that would be a good book title.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I want to emphasize that the book isn't just for Buddhists.
Yes. That was another question.
Yeah.
And you do mention that in there as well. So who was it? Who would you say it was written for?
I think all humanity. Now, whether they pick it up and read it, I don't know.
Sure.
But I think that there's things in that book that people can resonate with and benefit from, no matter what religion they are, or if they don't follow any religion. Because especially in the stories, when you see the stories, the people who told those stories don't need to be Buddhists to tell those stories. They're just regular people's stories that don't really have anything to do with Buddhism. And yet they found a way to put these teachings in practice.
It's very easy to read. I like the way that, it's broken up, so it's very easy to pick it up. Because each section is very, it's short, but it's heavy.
Uh-huh.
You know, like it's something you really need to chew on. So you don't want to read too much, because then you'll just get a headache.
Right.
You know,
right.
That was a lot of information. So that was, I like the way that you wrote it, and format-wise. I also, as someone who studies theology in different religions, I can see someone who isn't a Buddhist picking this up and seeing how it can relate to their own faith.
Oh,
maybe
yeah,
teachings that they've read,
sure,
you know, in their own
mm-hmm.
sacred texts or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
So that was kind of interesting, too.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little about who Togme Zangpa was?
I think he lived in Tingri, in kind of southern Tibet. Yeah, he belonged to this tradition of sages where they practice what's called Lojong, Lojong. It means thought transformation or mind training. So he practiced that genre of teachings, and so the text was from that.
This is probably a hard question, but there's 37 practices, and you touch on so many things with dealing with grief to jealousy to attachments. How would you describe the theme? Is there a theme running through the book? What would you say that
is? Yeah, it's transforming your mind. It's not believing everything you think.
Right.
That's the theme, is don't believe everything you think, and transform your mind into a more realistic and beneficial viewpoint. That's the theme. That's the main point of the book.
More beneficial.
Realistic and more beneficial viewpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or interpretation of what you encounter in life. Because what so often happens is there's an event, we interpret it,
mm-hmm.
but we don't recognize our interpretation as an interpretation, and we think it's reality. And everything goes downhill from there, because our interpretation is usually skewed, because we're over-inflating the goodness of someone or something, or, you know, over-inflating the badness
mm-hmm.
of it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we believe our interpretations and act on them and get into a bunch of messes in our life.
Right. We go on impulse.
Well, not necessarily impulse. We can sit and methodically think about something over time that's completely wrong. I'm not talking just about being impulsive.
Mm-hmm.
We get an idea, oh, that person doesn't like me. And then we, you know, think about that idea again and again. And, you know, the way they looked at me at the coffee machine at work.
Right.
And, you know, the way they handed that report to me. And the way they said hello in the morning. And we stock up all this information, which is based on our interpretation,
right. Right.
And use it to prove that they really don't like me. And because they don't like me, they're going to try and harm me. So they're the ones who talked to the boss why I didn't get the promotion.
Right.
So now I have to do something to stop them. And we can think about this for months and plan out what we're going to do for months. So it's not impulsive. It's distorted.
That's yeah. True. I think Living Buddha, Living Christ, who wrote that?
Thich Nhat Hanh.
Yeah, I think he called it the inner roommate.
Right? The inner roommate.
I think that's pretty accurate. Of course, they're called practices, 37 practices.
Yeah.
And in Buddhism, of course, it's called a practice. So I was reading this book, and I'm, you know, highlighting things, and I'm dog-earing things, and I'm like, gosh, I need to do that. And then I'm like, well, how do I do this? Other than, like, cutting everything out and putting on all over my house.
Well, that's what we did at one point in the Abbey. We cut out all the verses. We printed them out, covered them, and put them all over the Abbey.
This is one right here.
Yeah I just saw that there.
Yeah, they're all over there. Yeah, out in the woods.
Yeah, are they? That's great. I mean, I seriously thought, like, maybe I should do this. But
I mean, instead of putting, like, you know, you get coupons and ads and, you know, the latest this and that that we hang all over and on the refrigerator. Put something that's going to nourish us.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can imagine living here, you're reciting these.
You're reciting, and then you're incorporating it in your meditation practice.
Mm-hmm.
So in your meditation practice, you remember situations that correspond to these different verses in your own life. And then you apply the meaning of the verse to that situation and think, and it's usually situations in which we acted really poorly and had totally the wrong perspective. And so we go back through and think, you know, okay, I've got to get rid of that old perspective and put in this new one and not just paste chocolate frosting over garbage, but really transform my mind so that I see this new perspective is actually correct and that my old perspective was really just made up by my distorted mind. And so in that way, you go back and through something that happened and you apply this new perspective, and then it's a fantastic way to resolve all sorts of old psychological issues that you've had for years, you know, because we were stuck in some distorted perspective.
Right.
Yeah, and this just pulls us out of it. Yeah.
So how can those of us who don't live in a community, how do we do that individually?
You sit down in the morning when you first get up, you breathe a little bit and watch your breath and let yourself relax. You set a good motivation to be, you know, to not harm others and to be kind to them. And then you know, maybe remember a situation that you experienced or that you heard about or read about or your friend had and that applies to one of these verses. And you see that experience through how that verse is telling you to see it. And so you train in your mind like that repeatedly.
Right.
Yeah, so that you're really learning a different way to see things.
Right.
So, like with the example I gave, you know, that person in the office is out to get me, to then sit down and, with a militia of love and compassion, you know? Yeah. So here I am. I'm so negative about this person. I'm not seeing that they're just a human being who's trying to be happy.
Right.
You know? So I have, at this moment, my compassion got lost.
Right.
And if I see them as somebody who's just trying to be happy, you know, and they're doing the things they're doing because they're trying to be happy, then I don't need to take everything they're doing so personally. And instead I can look at them and say, and have some kind of empathy and compassion because they're trying and they're not completely happy at the moment. And then also thinking that how do I even know that they are trying to harm me? I don't even know that. That's completely made up by my mind.
Yeah, it's almost egotistical.
Yeah.
They're all out to get me.
Right, exactly. You know, I'm so important that everybody in the office is thinking about About me?
Mm-hmm. I think there is one that says, maybe it's something you expounded on, but you think you should look at everybody as if it was your mother. You know, and that's hard, but that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really powerful.
I think so. And especially to learn to look at our mother and see our mother's kindness.
Right. True.
Yeah, because most people, I mean, since Freud in the West, most people have been trained to pick faults at their mother. Yeah. And if you go through life just criticizing your mom and dad, it becomes difficult to be a good parent yourself. And then, like I said, you drag around all those old emotional things from the past.
What do you think would happen if, I don't know how many people have read the book, or have you gotten any feedback? Or?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it just came out, and it just got, Random House just started distributing it January 1st, so I don't know.
Okay, so it's pretty.
But we've gotten some good feedback on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ching Ching read it, and she said, I usually don't read books, but since you gave this one to me, I thought I should read it. And I read it, and now I'm going to keep reading it the rest of my life, because I really need this.
Yeah, I can definitely read it over and over, I think. So what do you think would happen if, you know, maybe people actually started doing these, putting these into practice one by one, and all of Spokane and all of Washington, I don't know.
I think we'd have a very different society.
Mm-hmm.
I think people personally would be happier. They would have better relationships with other people. Our crime rate would go way down. Our drug use and, you know, prescription drug use and alcohol use would go way down. Yeah. I think it would be quite helpful for people. Wouldn't have so many teenagers who ran away because their parents are drug addicts, or wouldn't have so many divorces.
Right. Yeah, it can definitely be transformative.
Yeah.
I don't know, I haven't read a lot of your other materials. Is this pretty different than what other things you've written, or?
I don't know, is it different than other things I've written?
Well, I think that's the same as all the books are about, how to take, in a way, they make the teachings very accessible. That's one thing, and that's true, I think, for all of your books, because they take things that are sometimes hard for people to understand and put it in language that people can understand. And the other is that everything is about what we're doing all through our daily life. There's that emphasis, I think, in your writings.
Yeah.
And then also how to work with your mind in a wholesome way. So that's in every book that you've
written. Yeah.
And I understand your next book's it's already coming out, or is about to come out?
Well, there was another book that came out just before this, which was a book I edited for one of my teachers.
Okay.
That's a philosophical book, so that's a whole different ballgame.
Okay.
Then the next one that will probably come out is a book I'm doing with Russell Coltz from Eastern Washington University.
Right.
So we're doing a book on compassion.
Okay.
Living with an Open Heart.
Do you know when that's supposed to?
Hopefully this year.
This year?
Yeah, hopefully. Or next year. Yeah, so I talk about compassion from a more spiritual viewpoint. He talks about it from a more scientific and psychological viewpoint.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It was a fun book. Both of us really enjoyed it.
Is there places that you didn't agree, but you lived it there?
Yeah. When it came to talking about the role of the brain, we didn't see eye to eye, you know?
Interesting.
So.
But both
we agreed that all the part about Buddha nature, you know, that didn't pertain to science, I would omit, and all the part about the brain causing emotions and things that he would omit. So we kind of compromised there. And we just said, okay, we're just going to keep it about compassion. And he can bring in a little bit about the brain, but not too much, because I wasn't into saying that the brain causes our emotions. And we put in the introduction, we wrote the introduction together, and we said that we didn't agree on everything.
Agreeing not to agree.
Yeah.
That's healthy.
Yeah.
That would be a good one. I'll be back here for that one.
Okay.
Is there, of the practices, is there one that maybe you hold especially close to your heart?
All of them, actually. All of them. I can't think of one.
Talk about seeing, getting weary.
The one about the emptiness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seeing illusory appearances makes you weary. Yeah. It's like, yeah, that one, you know, when you're always seeing negativity around you, and this is negative, and that's negative, and that's negative, and everything is appearing negative. I was just commenting about how that makes you totally exhausted.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and at a certain point, you just get weary, you get tired. But I wouldn't say that's my favorite verse. There's lots of verses.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to practice them all.
Those of you in the room, those of you who maybe were in the book, does anybody want to talk about what you wrote about?
Tell the drum story. Since she was the Japanese drummer.
So, in a nutshell, the one story I told was that years ago in my early part of my life, I was a part of this Japanese drum group in it. And it was completely what I took refuge in. And the group was self-taught. And our first debut performance, we performed 9 times in 2 days. And it was so different in Edmonton. No one had seen this. And so everyone thought that we were magnificent. We weren't. We just had different costumes on. We worked really hard. We were really sincere about what we were doing. But, you know, we were self-taught, and we were playing on plastic tubes with rawhide covered over the ends. And we had developed all of this choreography, and it just got everyone's attention. I think most people were just like, huh? But, you know, drumming is very primal, and people just sort of stop when they hear drums.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's drumming in Taiwanese temples, for sure. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very ancient kind of experience, you know, it just is very core. And we immediately became sensations. So to make a long story short, I remember one time we came out, it was New Year's Eve, and I had been doing this now for years, and we had gotten some skill. And so we appear in our little outfits, and the crowd goes crazy, like we're the Rolling Stones. And, you know, in that moment I thought, gee, you know, this is sort of where I thought a music career would go, mm-hmm. with this adoration. And I am definitely not happy, and this is definitely not what I'm seeking for in my life. Mm-hmm. And this whole sort of thing opened up where I thought, I can't do this anymore, because I was starting to learn about Buddhism, and I just thought, this is not it. And it was sad, but it was also very potent.
Right.
So,
thank you.
And I was so happy that I could see what was valuable.
Right.
Finally, the clouds parted for a few minutes.
That's great. Does anybody else want to comment about maybe why you would encourage someone to pick up this book and study these practices, Buddhist or not Buddhist, or non-Buddhist?
I think because it's quotes from real people just trying to apply the teachings. You know, I don't think it takes any really special gift or talent or knowledge to just give it a try and see if you can't do what the advice is from the practices. I mean, even trying, you have immense success. Even a little bit, you get relief in your mind and some more peace in your heart. And it's encouraging because then you're encouraged to do more.
Right. So. And where can people... You said Random House is distributing it, so is it in bookstores now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on Amazon.
Amazon.
And through the Abbey website? Or?
No, we usually send people to bookstores and Amazon.
And Shambhala.
And Shambhala Publications, they can get it.
Anything else anybody would like to add?
Does any of you have a favorite verse or something that's really helped you?
What's the state of my mind? I think that encompasses like all of them. Because everything comes back to what's the state of my mind, and just realizing, you know, this is a state that's going to bring suffering, then that opens everything up. Just by seeing it, it breaks apart. 36.
The one about seeing the kindness of others has just been so profound. And really, during my cancer treatment, it was really the only thing to do. That, you know, because there was lots of options to follow, very negative.
sad, angry mindsets. You know, there's like a whole buffet of options there,
sure,
you know. And a lot of people who would support you in your negative mindsets, like, you know, oh, poor thing, you know, that kind of self-pity and, oh, what you have to go through. And so seeing that there's an option to look in a different direction, just think about something different than that. Because the negative mindsets do bring such suffering. There's no solution to them in and of themselves. They're just a dead end. And the positive mindsets put you, can get your mind more and more open all the time if you dwell there.
Right.
And but the biggest part was the impact that I could have had on the people trying to help me. You know, when I'm negative, they're not having a good day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're trying to give someone chemo drugs, for instance, you know, they know nobody really wants that, and it takes a lot of courage for them to do that. So if you can be at all positive to help encourage them, then you've actually done something with your misery, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a contribution and made someone else's day better. And of course you feel
good. And then real quick, can you give me an update? I think, how many Bikshunis are there now? You're about to have another.
We have 6 Bikshunis,
okay,
and 8 nuns. Next week we'll have 9 nuns.
Okay.
And then also she's going to go for her Bikshuni ordination in Taiwan in the spring. So then we'll have 7 Bikshunis.
Okay.
Yeah, because you did an article about having a Bikshuni Sangha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a year ago already. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is one of the most inspiring. It's a very inspiring day.
Yeah.
It's really something, because it's it's so joyful.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, I can't even express it, but I think you'll feel it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it sounds beautiful.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's a very wonderful.
Okay. Activity. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that sounds great. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
Yeah.